This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. The world remembers a man whose legacy cannot be forgotten unless humanity should simply give up on the dream of justice and equality for all. Mandela, Madiba. The passing of Nelson Mandela, who by now you know died quietly in his home at the age of 95, is a global event. And we will try to give you a sense this hour, recalling the story of apartheid, Mandela, his struggle, his victory, and then his miraculous embrace of reconciliation and forgiveness, underscoring a powerful message unique in our time. There is no utopia in South Africa today, and justice and equality continues to elude the world at large. Nelson Mandela would be the first to admit that. Mandela's life, though, makes it impossible for humanity to claim justice is not worth the fight, or that victory is not possible. This hour, Mandela in his own words.
We will have created a society which recognizes that all people are born equal, with each entitled in equal measure to life, liberty, prosperity.
We'll have testimony from those touched by him.
We've lost one of the most influential, courageous, and profoundly good human beings that any of us will share time with on this earth.
People who knew him.
I do remember after he was free, he was flying around the world, and I was working in the ANC office in London. And he arrived in London at the airport, gray with exhaustion. And I simply put him to bed and got him to lie down for half an hour, just to rest. He was overtaxing himself. And I just simply needed to make sure he survived. He was so important to us.
That's Nelson Mandela's good friend Dennis Goldberg, who was imprisoned with him during his time on Robben Island. Mandela writes in his autobiography, The Long Walk to Freedom, that he was late to awaken to the call of politics and the struggle for liberation. In the 1940s, in college in Johannesburg, he found a community of white, black, and Indian intellectuals, young people who would form the vanguard of future political movements. People of my own age, he wrote, firmly aligned with the liberation struggle, prepared to sacrifice themselves for the cause of the oppressed. At Mandela's trial in the 1960s, the conviction that sent him away to Robben Island prison for 27 years, co-defendant Dennis Goldberg was one of those activists, prepared for a future he and Mandela could not know for certain, and a dream of victory they never discussed in the midst of the battle for freedom.
You know, one doesn't have that kind of discussion. What you are doing is working together to achieve a vision. And the vision was a South Africa free of racism by law, which was apartheid, which took away the rights of black South Africans and colored and Indian South Africans and left whites absolutely dominant. We were going to get rid of it. That was the vision. And here you had a leader, Nelson Mandela, together with other leaders, he always stresses that point himself, who was inspirational. And after all, we were on trial together in 1963 for having created an underground illegal army to do battle with the apartheid state. So I can only speak for myself. I don't think we expected to survive. We hoped to. We really hoped to, but the vision was a free South Africa. The prize was the freedom. That was the hope.
To gain that freedom, has Mandela always maintained that it was a war, or was he more a Gandhi-like figure in his approach? Certainly, he was absolutely straight-ahead politics all the way.
He was a political leader, and if we took up arms, it was to achieve a political purpose. War was not a principle with us. We were being subjected, and our people were being subjected to violence on an unprecedented scale, where every peaceful protest was met with imprisonment, with violence, with massacres. And so we took up arms to show the apartheid regime that the people would be able to develop the power, the military power, to take power. But we would prefer to negotiate a political settlement in which there would be equal political rights for all South Africans. The goal was always political. How do you I don't want to sound like a blind hero worshiper, because this is what has happened. And Nelson Mandela has become a worldwide icon of the man who single-handedly brought freedom. But he himself says over and over, he worked with others, he was a leader among leaders, great leaders. Oliver Tambo made Nelson Mandela famous because of that speech of Nelson Mandela's in the trial. He wasn't going to back down. He, in fact, confronted the judge. He said what our vision was, which was a society where we could live together in harmony and in peace. And it was an ideally hope to live to see achieved, because there was the threat of the death sentence. But if needs be, it was an ideal for which he was prepared to die. And this was an open challenge to the judge, the white judge, and the whole of the white media and apartheid South Africa. And in the end, I came to understand that he was saying to the judge, hang Nelson, hang Walter Sisulu, hang me, I was number three accused, and hang all of us. But there was no fear. There was a kind of elation at sharing this moment. I mean, he was under fire. He was stating our aims clearly, confidently, a bit of challenge in his voice, but not boastful. Not history will absolve me. It was, this is an ideal. And I think that speech was crucial in changing the understanding of both the judge and, I think, the world about why we had taken up arms. You asked about Mahatma Gandhi, who developed his theories of passive resistance in South Africa, because there was an immigrant Indian population who had been brought in as indentured labor and whose rights were not very great. So he learned this there, and it affected the whole of our liberation movement, not as a conscious policy, but as a hope to avoid violence. There was also a very strong Christian mission element within the liberation movement. You know, pie in the sky when you die. The life hereafter will be better. And so for Nelson Mandela and his colleagues to take a step away from that and to convince people of the necessity of that struggle and to convince the court and many white South Africans and the world of the justice of our cause was a remarkable feat. And for me, this is the greatness of the man, that when there were new situations, there were new answers needed. His whole history in political activity from the 1940s onwards showed this ability to analyze, to understand what the enemy, the apartheid government, would do and how to mobilize the mass of our people against it. That's brilliant.
Do you remember the first conversation you had with Nelson Mandela once he was, in fact, the leader of South Africa?
I don't, actually. I met him after he had been released and I'd been released, and it was clear he was going to become president. And we met on Robben Island, where he'd been imprisoned, and he was having a meet the press day. And we just had an interesting conversation about our experiences and our understanding. What I find astonishing is that, having grown up as a little boy, as he did in a rural area, he had this wish to go beyond the mountains of the Eastern Cape rural areas, to get to Johannesburg, to see the wide world, to understand the problems and to commit himself to a life, in which he would emulate his forebears in their heroic resistance. He says it in his autobiography, to the colonization of South Africa. He would be a leader to set people free. And this is, I think our conversations were always about politics and what we were doing.
Well, we're very grateful for that. It's interesting. You didn't say, how is the food at Robben Island? none of that.
That comparison. Prison food is not a topic of conversation.
Yes, indeed. Even now.
Yeah. What you think about is the chipped enamel bowl and the rusty spoon. Later stainless steel became modern. Yeah. What I experienced with Nelson Mandela after prison, one of the conversations I had with him was to say that he does what I do when you tell prison stories. You tell the story and you end it with a little wry twist so that your audience isn't left with a sense of defeat. It's like sweet and sour in cooking. You have to leave people hopeful. But I said to him, you meet the press constantly, and so you can afford to get a laugh out of it, but we have comrades who were treated so badly and so badly hurt, psychologically and physically, that you do need sometimes to show anger, not bitterness, anger at the abuse of power. And he sort of looked at me and asked others around. They said, oh, well, Dennis, we've won, don't be bitter. And I reiterated, anger, not bitter at abuse of power. And I was pleased in his inaugural speech when he accepted the presidency. And he said with a very firm voice, something like, never, never, and never again will we allow one group to dominate over another as in the past. And I felt vindicated, because there was the firmness and the determination that I hoped to hear him say, as well as his tremendous effort at reconciliation, of trying from the beginning to remember the past, but to try and build something new. Our policy from way in the 1940s was South Africa belongs to all who live in it, black and white together, and he set about trying to achieve that. And that's equally remarkable.
Dennis Goldberg, former co-defendant with Nelson Mandela at the Rivonia trial in 1963. More about the life of Nelson Mandela all hour long on The Takeaway.